Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, folks, it's now or never. It's time to start acting. It is time to engage. I hope that everybody continues to see that there is no light at the end of the tunnel. We actually have to, there is an end of the tunnel, and they're blocking us from the light. We have to break through if we're going to get light at the end of this tunnel. And going back is no option. And what I mean by that is we can't go back necessarily through, you know, history to unring bells. What we have to do is we have to actually remove. It's like destroy, obliterate, and actually, I'll just say vanquish. The best way to do it, because there's no scientific word for making something not exist. I mean, you can't, because we all know the scientific law that something at an atomic level, at a molecule level, at a physical, in the physics of science, or the, I should say, the physics discipline of science, matter cannot be created. It basically changes form. At least we can't fathom the creation of matter. I mean, there is this instance that there was so much power, so much energy that created this bursting effect. I mean, this is a theory that science has. But the fact of the matter is that we can't create or destroy matter. We can only change its form. And so when I say going back, we just can't kind of walk back through the educational process or the processes that have been used. We absolutely have to use a very deliberate and specific methodology in transforming what we're dealing with at the end of this tunnel, in transforming it as a passage once again to into the light. Because the path that the framers put us on was one that was towards enlightenment, and that this nation was on a path that really, it was God's plan of globalism. If those of you, and I know this is where I really get into dangerous ground, because there are people that do not, and they look at globalism as an absolutely evil thing. But was it in the globalism paradigm? Well, those people down in Florida that was a part of Spain, I mean, that was a Spanish colony. That was Spanish land. They took claim to that. Based on that paradigm, that should still be Spain. And that the rest of the United, I mean, we shouldn't have grown, but it was in our destiny. It was in our DNA. And if you even look in the charters of England, the plan was to go all the way across to the other side of this continent in expanding the states down that path, or these colonies down that path. That path really didn't change as one really looks at it, though the concept of stretching a state became ridiculous, that the logical option was, and this is why it was placed for one reason, and there were other reasons why in Article 4 it basically allows a state to form, or a state to petition the United States to become a state in the United States. So that is, I believe, our Creator's plan of how he wanted this world to slowly, you know, understand and humble themselves in allowing themselves to have the privilege of self-government, a government of the people, by the people, of the sovereign states, but more importantly, a government that is based on the supreme law of the land, a law that has galvanized our inalienable rights into it. Because, remember, the Bill of Rights really wasn't necessary. The only things that were delegated to the federal government were the absolute necessary and needful powers, roles, responsibilities that they had to do the few functions that they had delegated to him. That's it. When one looks at, and this is why John Jay, when he was asked to come back to the Supreme Court after he went off to fail in the treaty with, I think, Spain over the Mississippi River and Mississippi navigation and so forth, the reason he didn't want to go back into the Supreme Court because he recognized that the federal government had hardly any powers. There was very little to do for the federal court system or the judiciary because their jurisdiction was over only those things delegated. They couldn't get involved in contract suits and lawsuits and none of those things because based on the Constitution, contract or property, as far as within the Constitution, the context of the Constitution, whether it be a business, land, or what have you, they had no delegated authority or jurisdiction, period. So there were these common cases, though, where it could be, you know, if it was to be appealed, as long as it was within the jurisdiction of the federal government, they would have the appeal. So in other words, the states had the ultimate and final say over almost every aspect of our lives. And at that point in time, when they created this constitutional government, every state had a state-sponsored church. And that relationship with the state, that church that was in that relationship with that state, whatever the state was, their role, responsibility, and power, because they were getting a little money from the state government to basically provide compassionate services so that the church could actually do a little bit better than what they were getting from everybody. In other words, there were, you know, and at that point in time, it's not that churches weren't doing okay. They were layman's churches. So it wasn't like lots of people were really contributing. The people were contributing only as the necessity of what the church needed. So when there were greater times of need within the state because of weather or what have you, the state government had the role and responsibility of providing compassionate services, so like a hurricane. If a hurricane would have hit this, you know, Georgia or the southern states off of the Atlantic, then that state government would then have to step in with compassionate services and helping that church go in, because it would be the church that would do it, not the state. They didn't create government bureaucracies to do this. That was the church's responsibility. This is when we start talking, when we actually start talking about how laws and things were functioning, there was a symbiotic relationship with God's law and the law of the land. Except the thing is the church was the one that dictated whether, you know, you were sinning and doing bad or and should be reprimanded or, you know, given a scarlet letter kind of thing, shamed. But the fact of the matter is when we really look at the state and as it retracted its relationship from the government, it started adopting a secular or actually a godless mores or a godless paradigm in how they were going to treat people. Because the people over here, as supposedly religious freedom went rampant, well, the anti-religious freedom went equally rampant and even became very well organized because as people were actually out there, you know, counting their blessings, there were a lot of people working in very dark and nefarious or pernicious. There were pernicious people in very dark rooms that were planning and working and executing their plan in government to make our government establish or help them establish the godless secular church, which we read in the Bible, that is the Antichrist church. And believe it or not, they successfully created it because when the school system now can teach anti-Christian doctrine and actually, you know, wave a finger of judgment at anybody that tries to portray any Christianity in school, you know, you can't even wear a cross or you can't even, you know, I know that there's churches that are divided over symbolisms and so forth, and I don't want to get into all those conversations, but – you know, it is time that we actually start standing up and even, because, you know, I personally don't have crosses. I personally don't, because I believe in the atonement, and the atonement wasn't done on the cross. The cross was the act of ending his life, and it was basically an act of murder. But when Christ actually suffered for our sins, that was in the Garden of Gethsemane. And so, you know, if we're looking at how we were saved, then, you know, I kind of look, you know, put a rock there, a rock altar. You know, there's all these different artist portrayals and descriptions and so forth of what that setting was or how you want to symbolize that. But the cross itself is just a symbol, just like an altar would be, is just a symbol and or a tool. And the fact of the matter is that we get caught up in, you know, the symbolism so much that we lose sight of the fact that, you know, well, you shouldn't have that symbol, or you should have, we got to stop the bickering. We actually have to start standing up and saying, you know what? I don't see the cross itself as the problem. And even the Ten Commandments don't call a symbol the problem. It points out to us that we're not to worship idols. It doesn't mean you can't, you know, have symbols in your life. It doesn't mean that at all. What it means is that we better be very careful, because easily symbols like money in your wallet or a cross on your wall can instantly become something that you idealize, something more than something you should idealize, such as Christ and his atonement and those types of things. But again, I really hate preaching. What I want to do is I want to get into some context and so forth. We'll be right back after this. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
All what I'm really trying to get to, and again, this kind of helps as well, all societies that have ever been formed, they, in the process of forming them, the people start to come together and agree on very specific things. As a matter of fact, we understand in the Declaration of the Declaration of Independence that governments are instituted by men, which means that men have to finally come together and make an agreement and a compact and or a charter and form a government to serve them a very specific way that they all agree upon. This is the same thing with religion. When a religion is formed, but a religion doesn't serve, because again, religion serves us to, you know, for our salvation, you know, temporal or spiritual, those types of things, but it does not, and a religion is not our government. And especially in Christianity, that time when religion becomes our government will come when Christ comes to sit as our governor, as our Lord and King, and, you know, Savior, so forth. I mean, we should not. And this is actually goes down to Locke's argument against the church being involved and coronating and controlling government, because the Roman Catholic Church actually controlled government. The coronation of a king was the fact that the people wouldn't have a king unless the church blessed it. How are we any different today? How are all of these conservative organizations that are out there that claim to be Christian and conservative, how is it that they're any different, that they have to have a religious blessing in government? We rebelled against that paradigm, and yet we gravitate right back to it. It's almost like the guilt that Israel bears when God freed them and basically put the rule of kings and the rule of law, a representative form of government based on what... This is why the framers actually looked at ancient Israel and in trying to create this government modeled in a similar way. However, had technology and paradigms and things had shifted quite a bit since those days. We weren't getting manna from the heavens to feed us. We actually had to feed ourselves. We had to fight for our freedom. We went through what I would say is a sacred rite of passage in shedding blood to be able to enjoy the blessings of liberty as the Lord wanted us to have, or the divine hand of providence. So as we start uniting, I want you to keep in the front of your mind, am I placing a religious standard on what government should do? Because the framers already did that. And the divine hand of providence, absolutely, everybody agrees on this one point, that the divine hand of providence instilled and instituted the language in that constitution into these framers. So much so that it was almost perfect. However, the one thing that we needed was this shift that actually came from the Civil War. And we've covered this before. This is where the Bill of Rights finally took form in their importance, because prior to the Constitution and after the Constitution, the states were the problems. But this shift in this concept of the Civil War, but I believe that the Lord was present in Congress in driving very special men during the what we call the quote-unquote radical Republican era of Congress post-Civil War. It was right after the Civil War that did everything they could to ensure that all flesh living and being a part of this nation as citizens and under the jurisdiction thereof were protected equally. Concepts started changing, and anybody that's talked to me and anybody that has actually had dialogue with me, we clearly place this into context, and we agree, I believe everybody will agree with me, that the intent and what they were trying to do was truly a righteous intent. What happened afterwards, as nefarious men or pernicious people started twisting because they didn't like and they didn't accept the fact that these freemen were free. They didn't accept the fact that they ended slavery. There was these paradigms that they wanted to have separation and segregation. You can't enjoy segregation in a land where everyone is to have full, equal opportunity, access, and privilege. Fact of the matter is that when we look at the laws of the Jim Crow laws and those things that quickly followed, That is where Satan started getting and gaining ground in dividing and conquering us. So I ask you, as we look at a historical context of division and conquering, do you see in your life the remote possibility that you might be carrying biases and paradigms that actually create divisive, they're divisive in nature, and they create divisiveness, separation, and they'll obstruct our ability to unify on those principles that we all agree with? What person, what human being that shares, I don't care what the genetic differences are between different races and cultures, we all share his DNA. Because if we all came from Adam, then, and actually scientifically proven now, as they've done the research, and I've even talked about this, and so I don't go through all of the scientific facts and religious facts and all this all the time, because I don't want to take the time to do that. But I'm trying to state the case now of what I have to do and what we need to do. And what I haven't done is I haven't said that this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. I also provide, you know, these obligatory personal endorsements. These are not paid endorsements. I truly believe in Gary Smith, and his Fortitude Financial coaching services are of the utmost, you know, respectable and with the best intent, and he is serving you. And so go, if you need his help, you need that kind of help, go see him. If you need some constitutional education, until we actually create the content, and there are plenty of people listening that I've talked with and worked with to say, we need to do this. So, you know, I'm playing that old grandpa guilt here, you know, because we haven't done it yet. Then go to Keith Broder's constitutionaleducation.us, and you can get some decent, good quality constitutional education out there. He's got these little classes and little, you know, I'll just say tests and so forth to make you think on the Constitution. He has articles and so forth. And so anyway, Timber Nation, if you're looking for hardwood furniture, just basic furniture, Patriot Company, Patriot Family, and it's a family business, and it's all handmade. It is not. It does not come from China, and it's just head and tails. I mean, head and shoulders, not head and tails. Head and shoulders above any of the manufactured crap that is coming in from foreign ports, period. It's American wood. It's American harvested wood. Blah, blah. I mean, I could just go on and on. Stan Kluett at RadioDustCovers.com. If you're looking to get something covered, here's another Patriot providing what I think is a valuable service. And we use his products. We use Timber Nation products. So I'm just giving you personal endorsements. If you're looking for somebody that you would enjoy doing business with, these are the companies to do this. If you're looking for a company to support your newly founded organization, ISP, email, and so forth, adlocal.com, okay? Check them out. They're out of Michigan, but when it comes to the virtual world, you can be anywhere and be able to obtain that level of support. Now, as I get back into really what I wanted to talk about, because, you know, I start these monologues, and, you know, sometimes I want to try to keep it really pithy, but this is kind of a long monologue, because I kind of exposed you to a leadership paradigm that it's easy to get, but it's hard to get there. Because 9 times out of 10, when we see problems, we never place the context of those problems as the symptom of the upstream problem, the real problem. Why is this crap in our water? Because something upstream is dumping it in there. And these are outcomes of things that don't belong upstream, and we have to go upstream and fix these things. If we want to have clean water, we don't want to have this crap in our water, then we have to go up there and remove the things that are dumping the crap in there. And so, and I know I'm kind of metaphorically speaking, but getting back to us, if we're going to do this, I constantly say, and this is the succinct and as concise as possible, if we are to be successful in restoring our constitutional republic as designed, then we must be willing to set aside our personal and organizational differences, as well as our personal and organizational interests. In other words, you know, it's not just differences, it's interests as well. Because we actually have to say, you know, I can't do this because we shouldn't be doing this because it conflicts with the party's interest or our organizational interest. Are you kidding? That right there is a deal breaker as far as I'm concerned. You hear that kind of crap, you tell them, I'm out of here. Because we actually have to set aside our differences and our interests if we're going to be successful. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so anyway, and as I was going into break, somebody just recently mentioned, you know, alluded to the fact that sometimes when I talk really fast, I can sound like an auctioneer. And I don't think that that's a unique talent at all. As a matter of fact, anybody that has been doing something over and over and over again, you can start reciting it faster and faster and faster. If you've said something that many times or you've done these things, it makes it really easy to just, you know, get that spit out real quick in less than a second. And so I know that I can talk really fast. As a matter of fact, when I was leading in the civilian world as well as in the Marine Corps, there had been times where I've been told, you know, you rattle things off too fast. It's, you know, I can't keep up. And I'm going, well, you know, okay, is that my fault or is it a lack of focus on your part? That's the insensitive Marine, right? Anyway, I get it. People learn. And actually, the reality is we all don't learn the same ways. Which means the context or content of how we hear things in one particular manner or way, it may not register. We may not hear and understand what we've just heard in context to and in, based on the content and context of what that person was really trying to convey. This happens all the time in marriages, right? I mean, little petty fights occur as sitcoms are created and funded and go for seasons after seasons of nothing but misunderstood communications or misheard, misinterpreted, right? I mean, how many times have you watched a sitcom where somebody had heard something and they went off thinking that this is what, and then come to find out the comedy of the day is, oh, I thought you said this. You know, that is a real life anecdotal paradigm, right? And so what we are looking and what I want to do is I want to give you enough information to get you there, right? Okay. And so I know that I provide, and it's content heavy sometimes. Sometimes it may be pauses like that, where I will be struggling for words in trying to provide a word that would make it easy for you to understand what I'm really trying to convey. And so this is why I tell you, I'm not a professional entertainer. A professional entertainer just rattle that stuff off like an auctioneer. And they may not do it fast like an auctioneer, but they know what words to use. It's not that I don't care to use those words. I don't care to take that time to be professionalized and to be so smooth and clean in entertaining you. I honestly believe that people appreciate the honesty of somebody leaving their element. You know, if you look at my element, you have your career. You do something that is completely different than, you know, what you bring money home and put on the table to feed your family, put that roof over their head. It has nothing to do with your public service in saving our Constitution. We actually elect people to do that, but the process, the powers, and paradigms have all been so perverted that we actually have to unite in forcing them to get back within the framework of the Constitution. That's why we keep on saying these things. So when I, you know, have left my world of comfort in what I want, there's other things I'd rather do. Anybody that knows me knows I have some entrepreneurial pursuits that I would love to be able to pursue, but we can't. And it becomes more apparent that we can't because government has grown to a point where they won't even let us. They've created a mercantile system. All of this stuff that they're doing, they have no authority to do. So what do we do about it? Well, we have to actually step away from that ordinary life of a career. And in my case, it was in the military. It was in the intelligence community. It was systems engineering. It was a lot of other little things. I mean, when I was in the military, I received 5 military occupational specialties. In other words, I actually went through training to receive a career in doing something. Just like you may know people who have a degree of a specific nature, a very specific degree, and they have a profession that's completely different. But it doesn't mean that they can't do that. It's just that hopefully they're doing something that they love more. Or, you know, sometimes 9 times out of 10, an anthropologist or somebody like, there's these, what do you want to call them? YouTube video, you know, degrees or what have you. A lot of the degrees that kids have gotten out of the education system over the past couple decades are absolutely worthless, and they really can't work in a career of that because how many YouTube directors are there? And how much money does that put on your table? Because it's everybody's doing it. So how can you differentiate and say, I deserve a $100,000 salary to do something that most people are doing for free? Anyway, my point is that, you know, regardless of what your degree is, whatever your function, whatever your focus in your career, whether you landed there on your own, it just was the thing that, it doesn't matter. We make these decisions, we make our choices, and we understand there are consequences. I know doctors that make obscene amounts of money, and they hate what they do. But they know that as long as they do it, it pays these bills. And so they hate every aspect of what they do. And they really have this introspective going, I'll never do this again. And I'm, you know, and you'll actually see doctors where their family, they don't do that. There are families that are completely bought into the Hippocratic Oath of, you know, we'll teach this with our family, we'll keep this as a family trade and so forth. And I'm going, okay, so there you have that, you know, a cultural paradigm within a profession. But you'll actually see people that get into it and they go, wow, man, this just sucks. I'm not going to have my kids do this. When I was in the Marine Corps, I remember the one time my son chose to listen to me. Out of all of the times he ignored me, the one time he chose to listen to me is when I came home really frustrated with, you know, the Marine Corps in general. I made a comment and I said, whatever you do, son, don't join the Marine Corps. And so when he decided to join the military, he went off and joined the Army. And I tried to say, why are you doing that? I mean, join the Marine Corps if you're going to join the service at all. And this was right around Desert, or I should say 9/11. And he said, well, you told me what. And I go, that's the one thing you're going to listen to me on? Anyway, so you got to be careful what you say, right? But my point is, and this is taking up way too much time, we need to really cover the details of what we have to do. And this means service. This means that we have to be doing this. If we're going to have the opportunity of receiving the blessings and the insights and guidance from Him, our Creator, the divine hand of providence, just as we have proven throughout the history of this nation, from its revolution to its establishing and so forth, how He has played a role here, He will play a role again if we do it based on our sacrifices, based on our volunteerism. If we do this as a career, because this is not a career for me, folks. I don't get paid at all to do this. My wife, you know, kind of looks and we've kind of explained, and I've gone through this a few times, why and what we need to do and what we have to change and some of the things I'm going to do because I have to, because my life situation has changed as well. And so we need to really be clear what we have to do. And if we start making it truly about, I'll just say, our self-interest, if you look, when they were at the convention for the Constitution in 1787 in Philadelphia that summer, everybody there was being reimbursed for their expenses and compensated in a minimal essence. In other words, they weren't paid like what lawyers would charge to, you know, they were public servants, so it was a minimal, kind of like your jury duty. I'm going to say it was an insult, but it was a level of compensation that they received for doing this work. There's no way what they did made them rich, and there's no way what they did, you know, gave them the opportunity or a portal to become an emperor. If you look at Congress today, the money that they're bringing in, it is antithetical to that same principles of our framers. This is what happens. I'm absolutely okay with giving fair compensation. You've heard me say this many a times. Our state legislators are not fairly compensated. And I'm okay with the compensation alone for Congress. I think it's a little high, especially when you look at their compensation, including their staff of 20, if not more. I mean, most people don't realize when I talk about, and I'm just going to go on down a quick rat hole. If we ratified the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights, which would actually harden the representation in the House of Representatives to 50,000 people, 50,000 citizens, that would actually expand the House of Representatives to about 7,000 people, 7,000 representatives. If we were to pass that, there is no reason why 7,000 people would need to employ 20 more people to do their job. We would actually have enough of our representatives that they could do their own work and do their own job as it was done in the original time. And so there's all of these things are really good arguments, but I still haven't gotten where we need to. So as soon as we come back, I'll try to get there. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
So I live by three premises, and I don't try to repeat these all the time because they, even going through these can become a whole show. And I know I'm spending an inordinate amount of time on this, but I think it's important that I impress upon you as I impress upon myself that we have to set aside our self-interest. We have to set aside our differences. If you're not adult enough to do that, figure out what it's going to take. You have to start looking at principles that you've embedded in your life, and that you have to address those principles to actually modify your behavior and your ability to unite and unify with others without having these contingencies or these, you know, these, I'll call them blockades of, you know, your own self-interest or your differences and those types of things. We have to start forming, and we, you know, I can't emphasize trust. I cannot emphasize this enough. Trust is something that we should look at, something sacred in a personal relationship with others. When you start working at the local level, you must develop trust, and you must absolutely, and you have to be quick and swift when it comes to violations of trust. You cannot ignore them. I mean, the biggest problem leaders, or I should say, because they're really not a leader, if they don't quickly identify the problem and address it, right? You've heard me talk about this regarding the upstream versus downstream paradigm. A true leader, when they see the problem, when they see what's in the water downstream, they instantly go upstream. They start, you know, they hypothesize of what could be the problems, but they start picking things apart and they realize exactly what the problem is. A good leader that's, you know, understands government and all these other forces can actually see how there are many contributors to what's going on. And so if you can't be honest with yourself, then how is it people are going to be able to be honest with you, and vice versa? So we have to start developing trust. We actually have to start, you know, in the Marine Corps, we have these little leadership traits and these little things that base our understanding and being a Marine and being in the Marine Corps and working with Marines and working as Marines. And so we got general orders, we've got these different traits and so forth, and we kind of, you know, help educate these. So it doesn't hurt to have, you know, a little sign that says, you know, trust is, you know, a two-way street. Trust, you know, must be earned. Trust must be valued. Trust must be sacred in the relationship. That way, when somebody violates the trust, they completely understand that they no longer deserve that trust, and they may be actually out of the organization because they defied the trust. We have, you know, when you look at the framers and how they acted and reacted to people who violated the trust of society. As a matter of fact, I have told you that the two guys that were caught with Thomas Jefferson's facsimile that he brought, one of the two that he brought back from France, Madison had the other one. When these guys were caught, they were tried quickly on basically stealing his property. And when they confessed to the fact that they did this, because they knew that they were going to die, these men were hanged. Folks, they died because they stole his facsimile. In other words, in the liberal society that was functioning and operating under our U.S. Constitution, capital punishment was, you know, it was a very serious thing, and it was a real thing. Corporal punishment was a tool that was necessary in parenting to make and impress upon your kids that they needed to conform to the laws of the land. That if you didn't, you stole a horse, you were going to die. We do not tolerate that behavior. And this is how America for so many years was just so good, because parents ingrained upon their children what they needed to actually operate within a society of trust, because they didn't necessarily have laws that governed every little aspect of productions and consumptions, all these things. The Federal Registry is just so out of control. And this is where I go back to the symbiotic relationship between the church and government. Church used to enforce a lot of those things. But when it came to the actual theft of property, when it came to the harming of other individuals, those types of things, that goes into the court of law. I mean, the church may have action as well, but it goes into the court of law. And they were very serious about enforcing. They didn't have three strike rules. In other words, they didn't allow people to play games to say, you know what, I really didn't mean to, you know, and continue to say that. Okay, well, we got, you know, after so many times, we go, okay, we'll create a three-strike rule. We are way too tolerant when it comes to that. I mean, it's one thing to allow a person to change, but it's another thing to continually offer that red carpet to change every time after every offense, and similar offenses, if not even worse and worse. Fact of the matter is, we have to start putting aside our differences. I cannot impress upon this. And so it was brought to my attention. This is not an uncommon thing. Over the weekend, I was told that I'm a pretty intense guy. Guess what? I know that. You know why I know that? Because a lot of people tell me that. Shoot, you know, I was told that in the Marine Corps. As the Marine Corps went from thumping and beating you in boot camp, well, that was a slip. Anyway, as they treated us one way, and then all of a sudden became the kinder, gentler Corps, you could start seeing the quality of discipline and the quality of trust, leadership, all of these different aspects that you would expect out of a real Marine started drifting and changing. And even though the Marine Corps was giving lip service that they're still Marines, yeah, they were wearing the uniform, and in some ways they've earned that uniform, but they didn't have the same discipline. They didn't have the same focus. It was just like, wow. And today, I'm telling you, the people that are in the Marine Corps today, their paradigm is not the same. The culture has changed, period. It's changed. And so, and whether it's changed for the better or for the good, or the better or for the worse, I'm sorry, then I think that's where some subjectivity comes in. But I truly believe when you really, if you can sit down and academically look at it, for a volunteer force, I can see how in some aspects you will find that it's for the better. But in other aspects, when it comes to truly a military force and what a military force's mission really is, I don't think it's for the better. I think that, you know, what happens is war hardens how military has to act. And as a matter of fact, it's been proven. We just have never been in a war. Don't tell me what happened in Desert Storm. Don't tell me that these little skirmishes here and there. That is not a war. A war took years. And a war took a long time to resolve. What we have are what I would call military conflicts and or actions. Because technically that's all they really are. Desert Storm was just a quick operation. It wasn't really a war. Not in context of World War I, World War II, Vietnam, or the Korean War. I mean, you know, actually going in, taking, seizing full control. It was just not the same. The duration wasn't the same, and maintaining a level of discipline and so forth. I mean, if you look at Manning, and I forget the guy's first name, but he was the traitor that became, I think, Chelsea. You know, just that in itself showed the lack of discipline and so forth. Anyway, what we're going to do, because we don't have time to do it today, but what we're going to do when I come back tomorrow, I'm going to start talking and trying to focus, you know, in a general sense on the upstream versus downstream paradigm with you and for you. But we're going to actually start talking about getting organized and what we got to talk about and so forth. And I'm going to get into some historical details. I don't want to read a bunch of documents at this point. What we're going to be working into are the documents that need to be created or what you need as a foundation to start creating the documents informing your constitutional unorganized militia and moving your county to becoming what would be deemed as the minimum elements of a constitutional county. Each county and each state, it's going to be different. I cannot definitively state this is it. This is what a constitutional county must possess, because not all counties are equal in each state, and not states versus counties across the different states are equal. And so I hope that all makes sense. But what we want to do is we want to talk about these things. Now, I haven't sent out a constitutional minute for a little while. And because I'm intense, I know I've provided some very intense data. And so I'm going to kind of wait. I'll probably send out my final, because I haven't sent out that much this year. I will probably send out a final constitutional minute for this legislative session. And basically, it's going to be this little push in the back, if you or prod, whatever you want to call it, to say, you know what? Do not put your electorate aside. Do not think that your voters are not being engaged and being informed about what you're doing. So if they actually, you know, confront you with a true opposition and start attacking your constitutional positions, do not consider yourself not warned. You have been fairly warned, and you need to start making changes before you engage or you will lose. We're G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. Or I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.